Could your flight school simply refuse to participate in the recession? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob has embarked on a unique experiment. He has gone to the Part 141 side to show some detractors of his philosophical positions that it is possible to make some of the changes in the flight training environment he's espoused for a long time under that regimen. And Bob, thanks for taking some time to join us today.
Well, I'm happy to be with you, Paul.
Bob, you mentioned in the May edition of Over the Airwaves that you are having a very good year in 2010, and it comes at a time when a lot of the rest of the flight industry, or the aviation industry, has not yet recovered. Tell us what you think you're doing differently and how things are going and how that's making a difference at your school.
Oh, there's two or three things that I think that we're doing differently. One, we have almost eliminated any form of student dropout. And I say this in an industry that loses better than 50% of its students prior to check ride. And so the obvious question is, how do we reduce or eliminate new student dropouts? And there's lots of reasons there. One, of course, is good old-fashioned customer service. Number two is to provide training that in no way ever becomes rote or boring or just some reason for the student to say, I have to suffer through another day of flight instruction. Today, for example, in one of our light sport aircraft, we went from Buffalo International Airport to Hamburg to South Dayton. These are airports that our listeners are not familiar with, but they're three grass strips combined with a very narrow paved strip, Hamburg, and with a decided crosswind, and of course Buffalo International with an 8,000-foot runway. In that 1.9 hours of flying, that student, and I should say that the last airport in line had a delightful little hot dog stand right alongside of it, and we got out and had lunch at this delightful hot dog stand. So we took them through the old world, the new world, and everything in between. This is an individual that is pure and simply excited about every time he comes out flying. And this is not just one. We make it our aim to go to a different airport every time we fly. Not only a different airport, but a different kind of airport. We always manage to factor in, a stop along the way where we can have refreshments and sit down under a picnic table under a tree. I hear our competition right here in Buffalo back and forth between the big airport and one other airport. I hear them out in the practice area, and I'm saying to myself, if I were a student in that scenario, I would grow very weary of that kind of training. The only person that really does endure that kind of training is the student that truly wants to become a professional pilot, and he or she will endure anything to make that happen. But so many of our students are well aged well beyond that. Most of our students at Bob Miller Flight Training are over the age of 35. These are individuals that are not in a professional pilot training program. These are also individuals that have the means to go out eventually and purchase airplanes. And we have a relationship with Cessna as a Cessna Pilot Center so that we're able to be benefited financially if they do go out and purchase an airplane. So that's one of the big reasons why I believe we've been successful. We've virtually eliminated a student dropout.
Okay, now one of the other things you talk about in your article is the benefits to your business of having a modern fleet. How do you make that pencil out? Because there are a lot of guys out there I know in small flight schools saying, I can't afford anything newer than my 79 Skyhawk.
Well, we save the money in different ways. Sure, we are 30% higher in terms of hourly rental rates on our new aircraft and our instructor rates than our competition. But we can save the student almost 30% of their total training costs by operating off of an airport that has virtually no ground and departure delays or arrival delays, because we're a small GA aircraft without mixing it up with airline, cargo, and corporate operations. So we're saving the student Between $2,000 to $3,000 through the course of a private pilot certificate, just in the money that they would spend waiting for clearance delivery, ground control, taxi time to the active runway and arrival holds. That's number one. Number two, I can proudly say as a Cessna Pilot Center, we have our students going through, online ground training programs that the industry has proven, our industry studies have proven, we can get students through their entire rating in 30% less time than would be incurred in the more traditional, using the more traditional training syllabi. The national average is about 75 hours for the private. We're getting students through the private in 45, 46, 47 hours, utilizing newer syllabus materials. So that's another reason why we're able to save them money and keep them in the program.
Bob, one of the things you've been a proponent of over the time I've known you, and it's now, for in fact, incorporated into the Cessna materials, is the idea of conducting private pilot training and the instrument rating training simultaneously. How many of your students take advantage of the ability to do that, and does that save a lot of money?
That saves a lot of money, number one, because we're training both. Our students are flying in actual instrument conditions during their private training. They need a minimum of 3 hours of instrument training as part of their private training program. And so many flight schools, they put their student under the hood and or in a simulator to simulate real-world training, and the student just simply has to endure this. They don't find anything particularly unique or exciting about it. Certainly, it's not the same as going into actual conditions. Number two, we tell students from day one that a private pilot certificate today is roughly equivalent to a high school diploma, and that an instrument rating that follows is roughly equivalent to a college degree. And we make direct comparisons. If you want to function in today's world as an aviator that has the flexibility and the skills to operate in today's real world conditions, they really need to be thinking instrument ticket. So our students move seamlessly from private to instrument. And so that helps the cash flow in the school. I mean, we simply are not having to go out and recruit new students all the time because, number one, we're not losing them prematurely. And number two, virtually, I would say at least 75% to 80% of our students are staying with us from the private to the instrument. Some are going right on into commercial, and some, of course, will go into the CFI. So when we look at a student coming through the door, we immediately can pencil out some revenue that student represents to us, and it's about $30,000 for each student that we sign up. That's $10,000 in gross revenues we're going to receive on the private, about $10,000 on the instrument, and the incentives that we receive for selling a brand new Skyhawk, they can go as high as $10,000 too. So if we can do all three, private, instrument, and sell them an aircraft as a flight school, man, that's $30,000. Now do that about 10 times a year. You don't have to do too much instruction. I mean, it really has paved the way for us to do the kind of things that we want to do. And we're only in our second year, going into our third year as a flight school, and we've only been a Part 141 facility for just a couple of months. But that hasn't slowed us down. This is just using good common business sense, treating each student as a professional, valued customer, treating them right, eliminating premature dropouts, and then taking them through the whole course because they want to do it, and then keeping costs at a minimum. These are things that every flight school can do, but I marvel when I hear what you've indicated early on in the beginning of this interview, that so many flight schools today are blaming the economy, they're not making it, things are tough, they don't know how they're going to, this is hogwash, and we're doing this with the most expensive fleet of airplanes that you could have. All of our airplanes are less than 3 years old, and they all are G1000 equipped. These are $300,000 airplanes, and we're making it work.
Well, and I guess if you're taking your primary training in a G1000 equipped airplane, you don't waste any time transitioning over to a different aircraft just to get the kind of panel you need to do instrument instruction. That's got to be a little bit of a savings, too.
Well, yeah, that's right. And we tell them that. I mean, if you're going to buy a new aircraft today, it's going to be glass equipped. And even a lot of the older equipment is going through, you know, retrofits coming up with the glass. This is clearly where it's at. Individuals are driving glass equipped cars. They're listening to glass equipped telephones. They come out to a flight school and see six round gauges. They're going, ugh, you know, I thought aviation was a technologically advanced, science. and they go out and sit in a 10-year-old aircraft. This is a turnoff. Now, if that's the only opportunity they have, then they don't know any different. But if we can get them out to our flight school after visiting the competition and put them into one of our new G1000 Cessna 172 SPs, we've got them. I mean, we just tell them to turn on the master and the avionics master and watch that sucker light up, and they'll do it. Now, keep in mind, you know, money is tight, but a lot of these students will come out in $30,000 motorcycles. They drive $25,000 boats on the weekends. The money is there. I don't really believe money is the issue. If you can give them quality and they can see the quality, they'll pay for it.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk very briefly about the other end of the aircraft rental spectrum. My guest is Bob Miller. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about flight training. And Bob, in the May issue of Over the Airwaves, you talk about sport pilot training abounds. And you, I guess, were less resistant than a lot of flight school guys I talked to putting an LSA on your flight line. In fact, you were one of the first that I know of. And a lot of the student pilots I talked to still say they had to do some shopping around to find a school that would offer training in a light sport aircraft. There seems to be a persistent perception out there among some flight schools, that this is somehow going to cannibalize their mainline fleet, or that by selling someone a sport pilot program, they've missed the opportunity to sell them the longer and more profitable private pilot program. How has a flight school like yours, where you obviously cater to a higher-end clientele and make it work financially, justified having light sport aircraft as part of your mix?
If you go out and ask any traditional flight school, or flight instructor, how much does it cost to obtain a pilot's license? That's the way the question is usually asked. In every flight school I know, you're going to get answers everywhere from $6,500 to $12,000 to get a pilot's license. When somebody comes to Bob Miller Flight Training and asks the very same question, how much does it cost to get a pilot's license? I say, we can get you a pilot's license for as low as $4,000. And they're saying, really? Everybody else is telling us, you know, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $11,000. And I said, well, because we have to talk about which type of license that you're pursuing. And we talk with them about the sport pilot certificate. In most cases, they're not aware of what this is. In many cases, you know, they're fine with the fact that this is a daytime only certificate, flying an airplane with only one extra seat in a two-seat aircraft. This is what a lot of folks would just as soon do. But when they learn that all of the training for the sport pilot counts towards the private pilot, we simply say this enables them to get into the air as a pilot in half the time than they would if they were pursuing the private certificate. So we get individuals through the front door in two small steps rather than one big step, and we've sold a number of training programs on that basis alone. Number two, I am surprised. I truly am surprised the number of people that are out there that have medical issues, whether it's a vision issue, whether it's sleep apnea, whatever it might be. And when we say to them, listen, as long as you can drive a car legally in New York State, you can learn to fly and never have to take an FAA medical. And I would say that about half of our sport pilot students are in that category. And these are not just older individuals. These are people who are in their 30s. We have two with serious eye limitations, blind almost in one eye, but they're legal to drive an automobile. And as long as they're legal to drive that automobile, we'll take them up and show them that they can learn to fly with these limiting conditions. So that's another plus that has worked for us. I should say it's taken a little bit of time. We didn't put a light sport aircraft on the line and start filling it up on day one. It's taken us, we've had one on the line now for a little over a year, and that airplane right now is booked solid. We're anxiously waiting for our new Cessna Skycatcher, and when that comes in, we're going to have hopefully two on the line and then just continue to grow in that particular, in that direction, along with our regular full-size Cessna 172s.
Well, Bob, as always, something to think about. I hope flight schools are out there listening, because there certainly are some neat new choices now in light sport aircraft, and some of them from the big names that that traditional flight schools are familiar with. As always, we appreciate your insight, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Bob.
Find the current edition of Bob's monthly newsletter, details on how to get an email notification when a new one is released, and links to his flight school at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.